Ahoy, Vachon. How's the French say, Vachon? This is the Brown Briefly, where less is more, more or less, coming to you live over KVSH 101.9 FM, Voice of Vachon, your island connection. Please make us part of your day. And be advised that our assertions and views, which can modestly be described as progressive persuasion, do not in any way reflect the opinions of KVSH or Voice of Vachon.
Welcome to the Brown Briefly podcast and weekly radio show on the Voice of Vachon, located on beautiful Vachon Island in the heart of the Salish Sea between Seattle and Tacoma in the state of Washington. That was the voice of Brian Brown, creator of the Brown Briefly. Brian started the Briefly and brought his high standards of intelligent discussion of current events, laced with humor and empathy. Brian's motto also was, he had mojo as well as motto, but his motto was less is more, more or less. And he always offered so much more. Our Briefly panel includes our big bore pilot, real-life pilot, treetop flyer, and almost fully reformed West Texan, Truman O'Brien.
Almost fully.
See, I had to make that distinction between East Texans and West Texans.
You absolutely right? do, because, man, it's like two different worlds.
It is.
Yeah, believe me. Yeah.
I know. I spent time in Austin,
right
between the two, so I know what it's like.
Yeah.
We also have avid defender of justice, mariner, cyclist, rower, and top secret engineer, Kevin Jones.
Hey, pleased to join you today from South Puget Sound.
Right. You're on the cruise and you're zooming in, right?
Zooming in we are.
Fantastic. Good to have you, Kevin. Also, part-time politico, most-time housing wonk, executive director of Vachon Household, and full-time shenanigans coordinator, Amy Dreher.
Also currently struggling with cable management. Bruce is over here doing his thing, and I'm just fidgeting with the headphones. It's all right. Everything's fine. Everything's fine.
Yeah. Live radio.
Yeah.
You learn to sort of vamp, right? I mean, you have to. I'm historian Bruce Hallman, and today's small talk guest is Vachon Land Trust Executive Director, Theron Shaw.
Greetings, everybody. It's great to be here.
It's good to have you here, Theron. So before we jump in, as our usual, let's take a moment and check in about what special things we've experienced this past week. So Truman, you want to jump in?
Yeah, sure. You know that I'm a certified flight instructor, and that means I can teach flying. Just about everything, all parts of it. One interesting thing about pilots is that we have several layers or levels of pilot. We have the private pilot, commercial pilot, airline transport pilot. Well, they've recently, 10 years ago, maybe even longer, they added sport pilot or light sport pilot. And they're in the process of rewriting all of the rules about light sport pilots. The light sport pilot was restricted. They couldn't fly at night. They had to stay within so much distance. The horsepower had to be less and stall speed, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, there's a whole bunch of rules. Well, now there's new rules coming out in mid-October. And, of course, I've been studying like crazy because I got to learn all these new rules. But one of the things that all pilots have to do is they have to take what they call a flight review every 2 years. And that flight review is with a certified flight instructor. That would be me. And so this last week I've given, I think, two so far, and maybe three is coming up the rest of this week. It's a matter of spending an hour on the ground. You go over all the stuff, you know, planning and performance and all that stuff that you have to do, and then an hour in the air. And we try and just look for bad habits that might be forming, or teaching the new things that have come out that we have to do. Anyway, so that's been my week. It's been all aviation all week. So
nice.
There you go.
Nice.
Well, I assume that you teach, you can also do.
Indeed. Indeed.
Well, treetop fire.
Well, I will tell you, an interesting thing, though. When I was up doing one of these, one of the maneuvers you do is called steep turns. You bank at a 45-degree angle, then you do a 360. Well, as we were doing that, we rolled into the turn, and all of a sudden the horizon just went away in smoke.
Oh, wow.
The forest fire smoke was just amazing. And as we came out of the turn, the poor guy was like, holy cow, I can't see the horizon. I said, well, neither can I. And about that time, we lost everything. You just couldn't see anything.
Yeah.
And so I said, okay, my airplane.
Instrument flying.
I got us down out of the smoke. But anyway, kind of interesting. Interesting. Wow.
That's why you have instruments, right?
Indeed, yeah. It is.
It's like sailing in the fog, right?
There you go. Exactly the same.
Yeah, it's for the very eerie feeling for
indeed.
Sure.
Indeed.
So, Amy, what's your week been like?
My week has been busy. Let's see. It's definitely one of those weeks where I had to look back at my calendar and say, what did I do? But I did go to Stupid Bike Night, which was, as always, super fun. I missed the fire this year. There was no fire, but I mean, in a good way, I guess, right? None of the poof propane attachments. But it was still excellent. It was a great time. And then had a little surprise barbecue on Saturday night for my birthday, which was excellent. Had my friend Riley makes the best ribs around, I'm going to say. And I even had a chance to go to one of my favorite rib joints in Colorado last week and refresh my palate. And I will say, you know, Riley's ribs, man, if you haven't had them, you're missing out. So that was pretty good. And then, we did something at home. We did a little home assembly project. You know, we're getting those adjustable beds, you know, because we're at the age now where adjustable beds are the way to go. And, you know, they shipped the company we got them from. They shipped the frame unassembled. For an adjustable bed, right? And we get this package, and they're probably like 75 pounds each, right? Because we got the split king, so there's two of them. And they're just these huge, and it's the frames. And, you know, you see what, it's multi-party. It's got pneumatics and all kinds of stuff. And, you know, and I... you know, text the chat. I'm like,
it's like IKEA all over, right?
Right?
Oh boy.
Oh, but so I open, you know, so, and they're like, no worries. It usually takes people about 10 to 15 minutes. I'm like, really? Okay. So, you know, we've been dreading this. It's just, these boxes have been sitting in our house. I'm like, okay, Sunday, we're going to tackle it Sunday. We got all day, blah, blah, blah. So we open them up. And, I really wish, dear listeners, that you could see the photo that we took of just the jaw drop when you open it up. But the bark was worse than the bite. It truly did take us about 15 minutes. Most of it, you know, there's all kinds of like hydraulics and electronics, and there's even like a light. There's like an LED light that you can control under it. But it was much better than IKEA. It did take us about a half hour for both, but we were very proud of ourselves when we accomplished that.
Fantastic.
We were top secret engineers, Kevin. You would have been proud.
There you go. Hey, you know what? I forgot one thing. You were talking about the ribs. I forgot the other thing that I did this week that was really important. The Dre from Gravy put on a picnic at the country store area, and it was a fundraiser for the food bank. Fabulous food.
Oh, I bet.
Absolutely fabulous.
I bet.
So, anyway. You guys missed it. Sorry.
I bet.
It's great.
Yeah.
Don't you have something coming up on Friday?
I hope not Friday. Saturday.
Oh, Saturday.
Yeah,
whoops.
Saturday. I mean, there could be something coming up on Friday, right?
But you don't know about,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, that I don't know about. But yes, Saturday we are raising the roof for Vashon Household.
Oh,
yes, we are very excited. It's at the station, which is the old Kimco building across from Snapdragon. We'll be in the field back there having a little farm-to-table dinner. Salmon with Matt Dillon. Jam with the Coop. Cool. Taiko drumming. It's going to be really, really fun. So we are sold out for that event, which we are very excited about, and kind of really looking forward to announcing some new plans and kicking our fundraising and our programming into high gear for Vashon Household.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
And you're sold out. That's good.
We are. We are. Yeah. We're sold out at 175.
Wow.
Yeah. Which is always, it's an exciting moment, you know, when you're getting the event going on. There's always the time when you're like, do I pull the tickets now? Do I, you know, like, And finally we just said, all right, no, we're doing it. We're doing it. Yeah.
Fantastic.
Cool. Yeah.
Should be a great evening.
It will. It will. Yeah. And if you're, you know, if you want to come down, anybody wants to come down around 8:30 and just listen to the Coop Jam after the program from about 8:30 to 9:30, we'll just have, you know, beer and wine and come on down and throw in $20 and listen to Chris and the Coop just go after it for about an hour.
Cool.
Yeah. Yeah.
Great. Thanks. Darren, what was your week like?
My week. Well, Friday I had the great chance we hosted Linda Mapes here at the Land Trust building, and that was a personal treat. She and I went for a walk beforehand, and then we had a great evening talk and some time to share dinner afterwards, and she's so aligned with what we're up to at the Land Trust. I'm sure we'll get into that later, but it was a gift to have her here. And my son turned 14 this weekend, so I'm like in this shifting reality experience of dropping him off at the high school in the mornings, which is like a whole new zone. And so he's a high schooler now and went to his first soccer game for the season. So the Vashontonians are officially launched into their club soccer season.
All right.
Yeah, we'll come back and talk more about Linda's talk. That'd be great. Yeah. So, Kevin, how about you? How is South Sound?
Well, you know, before we get into that, Theron, your son had a birthday this week. Amy, you had a birthday this week.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I had a birthday this week.
Yes.
All right.
Virgos unite.
Birthday troika.
Organize against Virgos, right?
Just try it.
Virgos unite. South Sound is good. You know, we basically spent a couple of days in Vega Bay, which, if you're familiar with Anderson Island, that's the bay often misnamed. Oro Bay, but Vega is just inside Oro Bay. Spectacular little spot. There's a ferry there that's beached for, I don't know how many decades now, that used to serve on a ferry line in the East Coast, Virginia. I think. Virginia, yeah. So a few artifacts scattered around the bay. Then we headed to Olympia, Swantown, the state capital. And it's a really very nice spot here. So we're at South Sound looking up towards y'all on Vashon. And tomorrow, or actually tonight, we're heading for Van Geldern Inlet, which is just west of Fox Island. But other than that, had a busy week. The Indivisible Vashon had our membership meeting on the 3rd of September. We had a staffer from Representative Jayapal's office come and talk to us about what the representative has been doing. She's been busy. Amy, I understand you have some legislators coming into town. Did you mention that?
That's right. No, I know. There's just so much going on. So the 24th of September will be Community Forum hosted by Islanders for Ferry Action. And we're in collaboration with a whole bunch of organizations on the island. But yeah, we have Senator Alvarado's coming, Representative Fitzgibbon is coming, and Representative Thomas are all coming to talk about past legislative session and what they were able to get done for Vashon, and then take some questions and talk about what does the next legislative session hold for Vashon.
Yeah, that's the 24th?
It is September 24th at the Vashon Center for the Arts. 5:30, doors open for a little mingling, and then 6 o'clock, on the spot, we will start the community forum. Goes till 7:30. We're going to make use of all 90 of those minutes, which is why we're kind of saying show up around 5:30 for mingling to submit your question, because we'll take questions ahead of time and sort of combine and condense, and then just to make use of all that time, because we want to make sure we hear from the legislators as much as possible.
Excellent.
Yeah. Fantastic. Yeah. Free and open for all.
Yeah. So get your politics on there. And also, September, October, November, Dr. Larry Hubble, who was on the show just recently, is going to do the Finding Strength in Dark Times, Political Heroes, starting off with John Lewis. Mm-hmm. And there's going to be four sessions, Vashon High School Theater, 7 p.m., four dates. Keep in mind the 30th of September, 14th and 28th of October, and the 11th of November. So you want to all get involved with that. Mm-hmm. Also, speaking of influencing our county, the Vashon Maury Community Council special meeting on this, let's see, must have been the 3rd of September? Yeah, 4th of September, whichever, last week, the climate motion did pass 29-1, and basically a hodgepodge of climate action recommendations to the King County Strategic Climate Action Plan, which is likely to be voted on in October. The really awesome news is Councilmember Mosqueda submitted a lot of changes based on those recommendations that came from Islanders, and they apparently are now all, her recommendations are in the updated Climate Action Plan. So you'll see more of Vashon and Maury Islands in that plan once it gets passed, probably early October. And the last thing I'll mention is Passport to Pain is this Saturday. Oh, you have my. Until Thursday to sign up for the fun. And so it's not only riding your bike up amazing hills, it's the devil who prompts you up the hills, you know, along the steepest routes. And it's also the picnic afterwards. So go ahead and go on to, Vashon Island Rowing Club or look up Passport to Pain. Sign up, ride your bike, have fun, and I'll be out there with you.
Great. Lots going on.
Well, I got one more thing coming up, sure. too. On Friday, I'm flying up to Port Angeles. The Clallam County DART, which is the Disaster Airlift Response Team, mm-hmm. is having an exercise. And they've invited three of us to come up and observe their exercise so that when we get ready to finish organizing our DART, we'll have a much better idea how to run an exercise. So that
Very
should be
cool.
pretty exciting. Yeah.
Yeah. And look forward to hearing about that.
Yeah, it should be fun.
Yeah. Yeah.
That sounds great. So it feels like it was the end of summer weekend. I mean, there was a lot going on. First Friday, I mean, lots of openings, stupid bike night. And I miss the flames, too. I wish I'd bring the flames back. It's sort of one of those spectacular parts of it. And, of course, Linda Mapes' talk at the Land Trust. But then Saturday was at Japan Festival. You know, over 2,000 people, and lots of things going on there.
Awesome.
That evening, Carter Castle and his band played at the Coop. We also had the Husky football game that night.
Yeah.
And then Sunday, the Seahawks in a disappointing loss.
No, yeah.
So we're like, we won't go there this
what?
Week. We need some time on that one. And then I had the opportunity to attend the Liza Buehler community picnic. We're working with the community to install some historic signs in the park about the history of Liza Buehler as a resort, the Virginia Five, the dock, the store, and the community itself. And it was just a great, pleasant afternoon and a really active, involved community there in Liza Buehler. So, so a good, busy end of summer weekend. So anything else to add, guys? If not...
I think we're there.
Oof.
Okay.
Oof. Yeah, a lot going
it's
on.
Been, it's been busy.
Yeah.
But today, September 9th, is a significant day, as are all days, but it is National Teddy Bear Day.
Really?
Who did not have a teddy bear when they were growing up, you know? I mean, it's
I'm
just sort
sure
of like,
I don't know if I, I don't think
well,
I
Well, you were in West Texas.
I was, and I had a dog.
You had a
well,
dog.
Well, in fact, I had
and
a lot. I had a lot of dogs.
You probably had a calf, too.
I did, actually. I did. Hey, listen, this calf and I used to play hide and seek.
Oh, really?
Seriously. And he would play. I mean, he had it figured out.
Wow.
Yeah, it was a kick.
Oh,
there you go.
My father-in-law has a habit of sending a daily missive to our family, and he let us know that it was National Teddy Bear Day, and that apparently the origin of that has to do with Teddy Roosevelt and a bear he didn't want to shoot, and so they branded this little bear for Teddy, so here we are.
Yeah, that's correct.
But for those of us who grew up, when we grew up, teddy bears were a big part of it, and I suspect they still are.
Mm-hmm. So, I think so.
Yeah, so it's the 252nd day of the year, 113 days till the new year, 107 days till Christmas, 79 days till Thanksgiving, and only 52 days till Halloween.
Wow,
I mean, it does feel like we turned the corner on summer.
It does.
The weather feels that way a bit. So today in history, 1776, the Continental Congress officially named us the United States of America. In 1850, California became the 31st state, which has, I think, the fourth largest economy in the world.
Yeah, maybe they become the first state of Cascadia coming up here soon, right? Yeah, a new anniversary for California.
And they have an interesting governor who has been mocking our president unmercifully for the last month.
He's having too much fun. Too much fun.
If only our governor could have that much fun, right?
Oh, yeah.
And in 1956, Elvis appeared on the Ed Sullivan Show. And there was a lot of debate of whether they would show him from full Elvis Presley or only from the waist up. And they actually showed the full Elvis Presley, gyrations and all.
And so, are you ready for this? I saw that performance.
Oh, did you? Oh,
wow. Nice. Little black and white TV in the parsonage of the church, of my family's church, with a whole bunch of other, with a whole bunch of older kids, because they were more into it than I was. But yeah, I saw that performance. How about that?
Wow. Right on.
It must have been a sensation in the parsonage to show the full view.
Yeah, it was a big deal, man. Wow. Oh, we had a really cool preacher, though. Yeah, he was a great guy.
And in 1976, Mao Zedong dies, and China begins to change pretty dramatically at that point. So let's welcome our small talk guest, Theron Shaw, here, and learn a bit about Theron and the Land Trust. So, Theron, sort of standard question, how did you get to Vashon? Tell us a little bit about yourself, your background, and how did you get here on Vashon? And this is not your first time on Vashon, is that correct?
It's not. It's my third time
on
Vashon.
Oh, well.
I had, long before I was married, I spent five of my bachelor years living on a sailboat in Seattle, and it came a point where I was like, felt like I wanted a little bit more solid ground under the feet, mm-hmm. and I just couldn't bear to rent a studio apartment in Seattle, and Vashon seemed the cleverest thing I could come up with at the mm-hmm. time. So that was the first lap, and then lived some other places, and my wife and I moved back here shortly after we were married in 2010, mm-hmm. and so then our kids were born here, and we lived here till 2017 when we moved up to British Columbia for a number of years, mm-hmm. and moved back last year.
Oh, fantastic. Wow. Yeah. So where were you in British Columbia?
We were living on the south end of Vancouver Island.
Oh, fantastic.
At an international school called Pearson College. So mm-hmm. it was a mm-hmm. chance for our kids to spend a number of years living in a place where 100 languages were spoken every day around campus. So.
Oh, that's fantastic. Wow. So did you ever do the trail along the southern coast there?
The Juan de Fuca Trail? Yeah. I never did that one. Years ago, I did the West Coast Trail.
Oh, did you West Coast?
But I never did that Juan de Fuca. That was on my bucket list. I never quite got to. Lots of other trails, but
still
not that one.
Still on the bucket list,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. So how did you then end up involved with the Land Trust? And what background, what's in your background that led you to the Land Trust?
Yeah. Well, I actually met the Land Trust in my last chapter on Vashon. I was working as a consultant, so I worked with all kinds of different organizations around their philanthropy, board governance, fundraising, and the Land Trust was one of my clients at the time, so I got to meet Tom Dean then and a number of board members who were involved, and so that was my first introduction to the Land Trust. And for me, it's a lifelong personal tie to any ways that I can get myself out in wilderness, to be paddling or hiking or biking or sailing. So being outdoors has always been a through line for me. And my work in BC, it was quite impactful to live in Canada in the context of their Truth and Reconciliation Commission and their kind of national project on reconciling with Indigenous people. And also was quite meaningful for me personally to be part of a program where we started a secondary diploma, a high school diploma entirely focused on climate action. So those two things really were an intersection for me, and I knew that as I finished my role there, I wanted my next work to sit at that intersection. So that was kind of a guiding compass bearing for me, if you will.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Can I follow up just a minute on that with for many of our listeners, they may not be familiar with the treaty process and the Reconciliation Commission in Canada. Could you sort of explain that a bit?
Yeah, I believe it was 2015. It was a Truth and Reconciliation Commission in Canada, and it was established by the Prime Minister, so it was a national inquiry into all that had happened historically. I think I have always assumed that the name is a reference to South Africa and their truth and reconciliation there. And so it was an inquiry on this kind of foundational premise that you need truth before you can have reconciliation. So that document produced a long list of calls to action for the country. And it's led to a climate now in Canada where you can't really be a public school or a library or a university or any other institution in good standing and not have something to say about what it is to begin reconciling, to begin renewing respectful relationships with First Nations there.
And a lot of that came up, in particularly in British Columbia, because there were no treaties, right? And so part of that process was developing a process to develop a treaty, still ongoing, but fraught with lots of landmines, as any process like that is.
Yeah.
But because there were no treaties, there were no sort of legal kind of rights in the same way that Native people in the United States have. And so and that concept out of South Africa of truth and reconciliation, sort of Nelson Mandela's concept, is that we can't change the past, but we can recognize it, and we can recognize that we where we are and move on from there. And so that's a big part of what's happening.
Yeah.
And did you find that worked well with the institution you were there?
It did. I mean, it's I watched in Canada some institutions have a sort of surface level engagement with the concept because you sort of have to check that box in public civic space there. And others, like the one where I was working, spent quite a lot of energy and time and heart and money in really grappling with, well, what does it mean to be, it's a school where students live in residence. So you're literally a residential school, which of course has a terrible history for Indigenous people in Canada. And so to grapple with that, to grapple with the land that we are on, to grapple with giving land back and how we might do that, that institution did take that step as one of the first voluntary organizations in the country to gift a portion of their campus back to its original tribal territory holders.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Wow. That's fascinating. Good Lord. It sounds like a lot of work as well. I mean, a lot of angst in working through those issues, I would think. You know, I have a history with the Vachon Land Trust. I served on the Vachon Park Board with Emma Amiad, who was, of course, one of the founders of the Land Trust. In fact, I think the founder, if I'm not mistaken. But and I got to know her very well, of course, after spending many years with her on that board. So actually, I'm pretty familiar with the mission and actually the changing mission that's occurred with the Land Trust. But some of our listeners may not be quite so familiar. So can you give us a breakdown of the mission and what's been accomplished and where you see it going into the future?
Thanks, Truman, for sure. So the Land Trust mission is to conserve and care for Vachon's wild and working lands. And so we have, each of those words, of course, has a good amount of thought into it. It's the wild lands here, the working lands here. It's conserving land, so keeping it in its current use of wilderness or ecosystem services or agriculture, and caring for that land. So Land Trust, the more successful you are, the more responsibility you take on of all these lands to care for. So in a much less formal way, I've sometimes said to people that the Land Trust's sort of mission and community trust is preserving all the things that we all love about Vachon. And we've come here because it's a place with a lot of forest, with some beautiful creeks and watersheds and shorelines, and helping that landscape not just stay as it is, but be continually renewed and restored in thriving ways is really where the Land Trust sits for our community. I would say in terms of where we're headed, the Land Trust, so it's about 35 years that the Land Trust has been working here on the island, thanks to Emma and a number of other founding board members, who are some of whom are still around and supporting the land trust. And over those 35 years, there's a quote that keeps coming to my mind that I, as a guide for me, it's an Aldo Leopold quote that I probably won't get it exactly right, but it's something to the effect of the first rule of tinkering is don't lose any of the parts.
Yeah.
And that's Tom Dean, my colleague and former executive director for the Land Trust. He likes to quote that as a rationale for the kind of fundamental work of the Land Trust. You can't do restoration. You can't think about the function of the landscape if you lose the parts. So protecting those parts has been the work of the Land Trust from its founding, identifying what are these special places, acquiring them, removing invasive species, some cases building trails, and then caring for all that land. So every parcel that we own, we monitor, we walk its boundaries every year, we address any new invasive species or things that need to be fixed on that parcel. So that's been the work up to now, and it has been successful in a way that we're in a place now where we can start to think about the function of whole watersheds on the island and even the island as a whole, and how those watersheds serve the ecosystem of the island, how they serve the southern Salish Sea region. And so that's a direction that we're stepping into and feeling energized and excited about as we look at, for example, our two biggest creeks, Shingle Mill and Judd Creek, what their current status is, what each section of Shingle Mill Creek, for example, needs, what it would take, asking ourselves questions like, what would it take for this creek to have thousands of salmon in it in coming years as it has had in the past. So
I have to say that I feel particularly attached to the Land Trust, because I think as a member of the park board, we contributed a great deal to the evolution of the Land Trust. The first thing that we did was we were instrumental in acquiring Fern Cove, and the land trust and the park board worked together to, I don't go into the whole history of that, but that was our first collaboration. And one of the things that happened there was the land trust at that time wanted to take the land, the property, each of the properties that they owned, and basically not allow anyone to come into it. That we're going to keep it as it was, and maintain it exactly as it's always been. And the park board said, "Whoa, whoa, whoa! Wait a minute! If we're going to own, if this is property is going to be owned by the park board, we are a park and recreation board. We have to have access. The public has to have access to the property. And so we're not going to sign up for this deal unless you allow the public to come in." And so that was the impetus for putting in the trails and the signage and all of those things that you guys are so incredibly famous for now. But the park board is the one who forced that to happen, which I think is kind of interesting.
That's a great story, Truman, and it's you know, something that we grapple with for all the parcels that we own, because there are places, and Shingle Mill's a beautiful example, where having a chance to walk along that stream is it's nourishing to those of us who walk it, and it's also sort of inspiring and educational to see that creek and so forth. And there are other parcels and places that the Land Trust has acquired where we have intentionally set them aside, because different things happen in a place when humans don't walk through. Sure. And so we're always asking that question of, is this a place that we want to highlight as a place for humans and other species to interact? Is this a place that we want to set aside? Is it sensitive for some reason, et cetera?
Yeah, no, I think that's absolutely brilliant. I mean, the whole Fisher Pond complex, you know, there's a wonderful trail that goes through there. And it's, of course, the headwaters of Shingle Mill. Mm-hmm. And you guys have acquiring properties all along Shingle Mill. It's brilliant, I think, the way you've done it. You pretty much have the whole whole watershed now, don't you?
It's
under your guys. Anyway, I'm very happy with what you guys have done. And now the farming. You mentioned that you've evolved into farmlands as well. I mean, but that's part of what the island is and part of what we need to preserve. I think that's really wonderful that you've done that. So that's great. Yeah. And that evolution, I think, is really important.
How does that work with the farmlands? What farmlands are you currently working with, and what does that look like?
Yeah, great question, Amy. So many people associate Matsuda Farm with the land trust that was acquired by the land trust about 10 years ago. And the land trust has been farming that with its own staff and employees for about a decade now. And over the last year or so, we've been looking at that farm and how to help that farm take its next step of thriving as an agricultural operation, and made the decision to invite a leasing farmer to take over the day-to-day management of that. So that's been a really thoughtful process of what's important to that, how to preserve the history of that place, what does that specific parcel of land need most, how can it be of greatest agricultural service to the island. And so we're in that process now, and looking forward to welcoming a new farmer there in the new year. Hope to have an announcement for that sometime soon, but I wish I can't quite say that right now.
You know, as a pilot flying over the island, I'm always just totally amazed at the amount of forest that's still here. I mean, we are so heavily forested. It is amazing to me when you see all these little homesteads, or as I would call them, in amongst the trees. But it's amazing. And I think it's a large part of that is due to the work that you guys are doing.
And to your question, Amy, about the land trust role with farms on the island, just like the forests and creeks of the island, that agricultural history here, whether it's in the last 100 years or the last 500 years, there's been cultivation of food for humans on this this island. And so, you know, the land trust's particular expertise is around putting land in community care, and for young farmers who want to grow food for their community, coming to an island like Vashon and saying, gee, I'd love to acquire 10 acres and a house, and I'm going to do it working as a farmer, is like a impossible financial equation for them. So it's a place that the land trust can work together to acquire a property, put an agricultural easement on it that lowers its price point, and be able, in this case, to lease it to some young farmers who want to do that work in service of the community. So,
you know, one thing that's always bugged me is that when you talk about environmental movements, oftentimes it's, oh, we have to protect the animals and we're going to do this and that, and they don't take into account people. And, you know, my thought is, hey, people are part of the environment, for crying out loud, and you guys are taking that into account. And you're saying, hey, we are a part of the environment, and how do we interact with it in a way that doesn't damage it and it helps us as well? So I really, again, my accolades to you folks for that work.
That's one of the fascinating things about being a land trust on Vashon. Washington State has 30-some land trusts across the state. Mm-hmm. It's a really different thing to be a land trust in the Metau Valley or in the Palouse or the Kitsap Peninsula, with much larger land areas that don't have the hard borders of an island. And we are here as humans with all these other life forms and creeks and trees and so many abundant life forms here. So you really have to grapple with that as a land trust on this finite amount of land. Like, what is the interaction of humans with the rest of the landscape? What are the ways that we as stewards of the landscape can help all life here flourish? So
there you go. Excellent.
So a couple times you've talked about success. So what is a success? How do you measure that success? Yeah. And what has the land trust accomplished? I mean, how many acres do you have under your easements at this point? And how is that divided between farmland and natural and sort of super protected versus public access? You know, all that, sort of give our listeners a sense of that.
Yeah, sure. Well, the land trust, so we preserve land in different ways. Sometimes it's with easements. Most often it's with acquiring the property. And sometimes the land trust acquires it. Sometimes the park board, as Truman said, acquires it. Sometimes the county acquires it. So it's sort of who ends up owning it and who ends up taking care of it. Those things actually don't even have to be the same thing. So sometimes the land trust might end up the owner, but there's an easement that's owned by the county. And so there's ownership can be split in different ways, but the land trust owns about 400 acres on the island, and there's a total, including that, of around 3,000 acres across the island that
wow.
is owned by between the county and the park district and the land trust that are lands
wow.
in the public mm-hmm. trust. Mm-hmm. We are looking at, you might have heard of the Montreal Protocol. It's looking to have 30% of lands around the planet mm-hmm. In conservation by 2030. And we, not too long ago, tried to, in a rough way, calculate where we're mm-hmm. at on an island. I think we're at 12 or 13%.
I was thinking, is it 23,000 acres? Is it the whole island? Is that what, does that number ring a bell?
I don't know that number.
I think that's about yeah. right. Isn't it around 23,000?
Yeah.
So when we think of success, acres is one. Land trusts like to talk about acres protected and dollars mm-hmm. raised, and you know, those are kind of surface levels. I was just talking to one of my board members yesterday about this, and to me, there's so many more essentially interesting metrics of success mm-hmm. than those are good mm-hmm. ones to start mm-hmm. with. But right. you know, if you want to talk about success, well, how many salmon are coming back to the island? Mm-hmm. That's one that I dream a lot about. What would it look like for thousands of salmon to come back here? How much of our food do we produce for ourselves here? You've done such brilliant research that's inspired me a lot, mm-hmm. Bruce, around the indigenous population of mm-hmm. being around 12,000 people here before contact. And so apparently 12,000 people can live here without Costco.
Well, I don't know. It may be tight. I'm not sure.
So, you know, what would it look like if this landscape even mm-hmm. began to move in that direction? Mm-hmm. Those are things that I think a lot about in terms of metrics for success.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. Was it the Church of Great Rain that came up with the drawing of the high rise apartments right. and stuff on Vashon? It's really mind boggling to think that. But we'll never get there, I'm sure.
we hope not, yeah, at least, yeah. So that sort of leads me into this question about this 1750 map mm-hmm. yeah. that you've talked about. You talked about it at the Big Sky mm-hmm. event, and Bruce Morser developed a map for the Heritage Museum of what Vashon would have looked like in 1750 before contact with Europeans. Mm-hmm. And tell us a little bit about that map and what it's been doing with you in your head.
I would love to. I saw that map the first time having coffee with you, Bruce, mm-hmm. and you brought it to me. And I just remember it kind of stopped me in my tracks. Mm-hmm. For any listeners who haven't been into the Heritage Museum lately, please, please go in and look at the new permanent exhibit, and has a series of maps from 1750 up to 2020. Mm-hmm. And the 1750 map, of course, is the only one that's not directly referencing a previous map, because there weren't any maps then. But it's a compilation of different oral histories and sources of information from that time and projections of the landscape. But you look at this map, and you have to look at it coupling with this population mm-hmm. research that you've done, Bruce, and think, well, 12,000 people, the thing that immediately pops out is Quartermaster Harbor is the center of the business. It's lined with neighborhoods and communities. It's got travel ways and trade ways, and you can see where the salmon fisheries and shellfish and seabird hunting areas and even burn areas that were probably for camas or other cultivation. And so just to look at that map, I feel like it changes you. The next time you drive Quartermaster Drive after that, you're like looking around from side to side, thinking, trying to conjure in your head what it would be. And even you and I have talked, Bruce, about, well, exactly how many longhouses would it be for 12,000 people? And then you start to try to imagine 150, 200 structures, very imaginable mm-hmm. along those shorelines when we just think about the number of structures that are there now, especially since they were so much more efficient with putting humans in their containers. We put fewer humans in our containers today than they did at that time. So that map, to me, in one image, embodies an aspiration for the land trust. You want to talk about a measure for success. And so I was we mentioned Linda Mapes earlier, and in her book she talks about an interview that she did with the Nootchatlot people on Nootka Island on the west coast of Vancouver Island, and they have initiated in the last few years this idea of salmon parks. We have national parks, provincial parks, state parks, and so salmon parks with a 500-year planning timeline for what it is to bring back salmon stocks on those areas. And it's with a mindset like that that's what seeing that map does for me. You look at this map, you see what it was, you know what the population was, and you start to think, for us as an island community, the people who are gifted to receive this land and charged with stewarding it to pass it on to future generations, let's think 500 years out and what it is to steward this land back to even in the direction of the abundance that we knew here.
Wow.
So Kevin,
well, kind of a follow-up to that, Theron, and appreciate your description, how that map struck you and what it meant to you. But I understand the Land Trust has been working closely with the Puyallup tribe, who inhabited a lot of those longhouses. And, you know, people see that the island somehow is being uninhabited, right, when it was discovered by white people. But the work that you're doing to kind of reestablish Vashon's role in Central Puget Sound, the ecosystem that we live in, the role of the Puyallup tribe, if you could talk a little bit about that. And then I'd like to sneak in another second question, is I know that you have been working closely also on climate issues and working with King County. And if you could also comment on the Land Trust role in addressing climate issues, I would appreciate hearing from you.
Yeah, I would love to. I can actually do both those in at once, because our work with the Puyallup tribe is centered really around climate. Most of us have heard of the Climate Commitment Act in Washington and the carbon market that has grown out of that. And so the revenues from that carbon market, a percentage of those, 10%, are set aside for tribal use, particularly around climate resilience projects. So we worked closely with the tribe over the last year to prepare, to shape some ideas and translate those into a proposal for them to receive. They weren't already receiving those funds yet. And so to help them receive some of that funding for climate resilience projects that are priorities for them as a tribe. And they were interested in adding to priorities that they already have, the beginning restoration work on Vashon. So some of that funding will be a collaboration between the Land Trust and the Puyallup tribe, particularly their fisheries department, and we'll be focusing on Judd Creek and doing restoration design for the creek, beginning some experiments of renewing the salmon run there, and starting to actually do some of the restoration work with those funds. So it's really exciting to meet them and begin have the offing of that relationship be around some actual work that we can do together that's meaningful to this Vashon community, that's meaningful to them. For listeners who might not be familiar with the term UNA, the tribes have what's called their usual and accustomed area. It describes the area in which they would traditionally do their fishing. And Vashon is right in the heart of the Puyallup tribe's UNA, and it's also one of the most urban tribes in the country. So their reservation is in Tacoma, as most people know. It's an includes an industrial port, and it's one of the things that contributes immensely to their prosperity as a tribe, but also means that places for them to fish, hunt, gather are much more limited in their traditional territory. And Vashon's at the heart of that. To me, one of the things I'm delighted at this very concrete start for our work with them. And when I let my mind cast into the future, what feels exciting to me is to imagine the tribe feeling welcome and engaged and present and active here in all kinds of ways. There's a group that we've done some training with as a Land Trust this year, Squaxin Island tribal members, that talk about, Bob Whitener talks about that a key element of restoration is restoring indigenous presence on the land, and that actually is restoration. It's not just a DEI box to check. There's cultural knowledge, there's presence on the land, there's ways of managing the land that are critical to restoration. So it's exciting to see that taking some really tangible form starting in Judd Creek.
Yeah. If I could just do a quick acknowledgement. You mentioned we're talking about stewardship of the land. You talked about the land trust involved with agriculture. I'll just acknowledge the Matsuda family and Miyoko Matsuda, who is the last steward of the Matsuda farm before the land trust acquired it. Miyoko is now in Shorewood, it turns out. Mm-hmm. So, but just wanted to acknowledge her work to keep the farm as a farm.
Thank you for that, Kevin. I agree.
And, you know, what's fascinating to me is that I think it's her son, or maybe it could be her nephew. I'm not sure. I can't remember which. But half of that land belonged to him. Mm-hmm. And he began planting trees there. And this was many years ago. I was there. And there were just, you know, a few trees and with their little protection. And I'm thinking, boy, what a joke this is. Holy cow. That's an incredible forest now. I mean, I flew over it the other day and I went, oh my gosh, is this is that little tiny forested area? I mean, it's huge. It's amazing.
Yeah, it's a 5-acre piece of forest.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But that concept of usual and accustomed areas use goes back to the Medicine Creek mm-hmm. Treaty and the words in the Medicine Creek Treaty that are upheld by the Bolt decision and then sort of changes the whole nature of relationships of Native people and settlers to the natural environment, to fish, to all those kinds of things. So it's a fundamental building block, and it was there from the beginning. It was there from first contact, if you will, but was ignored for years, but has come back as a very powerful way of sort of rethinking what that kind of reconciliation means.
And if listeners don't already have plans this evening, there's a really important film tonight at the Vashon Theater that's exactly about that, Bruce. That's called The Fish Wars, and it's laying down that whole history of the conflict around fisheries and how that what led to the Bolt decision and what's led to this current situation where tribes have treaty guaranteed rights to fish and hunt and gather in their territories.
Mm-hmm. I wanted to ask, I think if I remember correctly, there's kind of a project evolving on the island, right? Sort of the Island Center Trail, right around sort of putting together a string of conserved lands that would allow folks to, you know, walk from, I think, you know, the ultimate goal was one end of the island to the other, right? But part of that was just sort of the heart of the island, right? To be able to kind of move from the Burton area all the way into town. Is that something that the Land Trust is a part of? And what is that looking like? And what's the evolution of that?
Yeah, great question, Amy. So the dock-to-dock ferry dream, or trail dream, it crops its head up every once in a while, mm-hmm. I'm told. I would say in general, the land trust, we're always looking through our lens of conservation priorities when there's a property that's available. Is it adjacent to a preserve? Is it in a key watershed? And some of those criteria might be, well, we know we have a trail at Judd Loop and Island Center Forest. Are there ways we could connect those two? So we're working on a trail through the Singer property, and that will be something built over the next year or two that would make a cool link like that. Mm-hmm. So I would say it's not different than the work that the Land Trust has done over 35 years, just always looking for interesting ways to make connections that are key to a trail system or to a functioning of a watershed or to adding to a preserve. It's not like a dock-to-dock trail is hard to see that pathway in the near future, so I wouldn't say it's a project that's on our like next couple years radar, but always looking for those connectivity pieces that that let us traverse this landscape on foot. Yeah.
And sort of, you know, sort of being able to add to Vashon's walkability mm-hmm. without adding concrete, yeah. you know, well, like that's, yeah. and you know what, like, where is that usefulness? If it's in the heart, you know, if it's sort of, there's nowhere to park or to move or to, you know, like, mm-hmm. is it just a recreational trail or is it at any point sort of, you know, functional in that way?
I have to tell you, I've lived here for now 35 years. And that's been that it's come up from day one until today. People have talked about that trail, and it's almost impossible because of all the variety of ownerships. Mm-hmm. But
it's interesting, in the 1970s it was possible to do that.
Exactly,
because
yeah.
even though it went across private properties and things like that, it hadn't been fenced off. It hadn't been, there weren't impediments.
That is true.
And so, you know, in the 60s and 70s, you could walk from ferry dock to ferry dock.
Well, then you wouldn't get shot in those days. You might. yeah, that's funny. I was just going to say one other thing. The restoration of the fishery, I worked with the forest stewards for a number of years, and I've told this story before, but we moved logs into shingle mill, mm-hmm. and I kept going, what are we doing? We're gonna put these trees in the creek? What? And, you know, I had to explain, mm-hmm. no, that's fish habitat. Oh, and it works. I mean, the fish are coming back, so. Amazing.
Yeah, the mm-hmm. cumulative impact of our presence here over time, as mm-hmm. we have, you know, when agriculture came to the island and they needed, and creeks were in the way, so they needed to move them over into a ditch, mm-hmm. and then that meant concentrating a number of tributaries of a creek into that ditch, which yeah. increased the flow, which increases the erosion, and you end up with, if you look at an aerial view of Shingle Mill Creek, you see this fan of sand yeah. that just yeah. gets constantly added to at the estuary down at Fern Cove. And so, you know, those are the things that it is sometimes feels maybe like a cognitive dissonance, where you walk the trail at Shingle Mill, it looks beautiful. It's sort of like, what else is there to do? Mm-hmm. And the kind of restoration that we're designing and working towards in that creek and in Judd Creek is to think, well, what it doesn't make for very, the current creek, for example, doesn't make for very high quality habitat for little baby salmon who want to grow big and strong and go out into the ocean. And so what does it take to widen the creek, hold water there, create little backwaters and eddies and reconnect it to the floodplain? And it will change how it looks some, but hopefully it also changes who lives there.
How about bringing in beaver?
I think beaver are a great idea.
Yeah, that's a thought. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So give us a little sense of what do you see ahead for the land trust? And what are the sort of sensitive areas or key areas on the island that you're interested in and preserving?
Great question. Well, I've talked a little bit already about these two largest creeks on the island, Shingle Mill and Judd. And so we are getting started this fall and into next year in mm-hmm. actual restoration designs for those. What do each of those creeks need, and what are the steps that would take over the next few years to really elevate the habitat there? And then we're always looking around the edges and filling in the gaps in the centers of existing preserves and key watersheds, working down at Tahlequah mm-hmm. And adding to the other preserves around the island. Those are priority areas for us. But the work of those restoration designs and the beginnings of what it would take to renew the fisheries in each of those creeks, and doing that with the tribe and with the Nature Center and others mm-hmm. on the island, are key focus areas for us.
Yeah, and those are the two largest creeks. I mean, what, there's 24, 25 other creeks on the island that all had salmon at some point, and very few do now. Mm-hmm. And so is that also a focus?
We will be prioritizing those two largest creeks. And mm-hmm. I would say the focus on those other creeks will be more on the estuaries around the perimeter of the island, mm-hmm. which are places that the migrating salmon from elsewhere stop, eat, grow. We're learning that salmon actually duck into other creeks and hang out for a little while, and then mm-hmm. they move on to another one on their way out to sea. So that's a way that we can be of service.
Yeah, the estuaries are a huge restoration effort. I know mm-hmm. that mm-hmm. the eelgrass and all of this, those things, the sea walls that, you know, are being taken out. I mean, those are huge, huge restoration areas. Absolutely.
This conversation could go on for, and we'd love to have you back at some point.
That'd be great.
So if in our last minute or two here, if people want to get involved with the Land Trust, what do they do? Who do they contact? How do they do that?
Well, the quickest and easiest is to send an email to info@vashonlandtrust.org. We have volunteer opportunities. Our trail stewardship group is every Tuesday morning. Friday mornings at the farm, last Saturday of the month is also a volunteer opportunity. We've mentioned Linda Mapes. We've got some First Friday speaker series happening this fall. So again, the first Friday of October and November. We've got some really interesting conversations coming up in October. It'll be Jacques White, who's the executive director for the Long Live the Kings, which is a group that's really brought expertise for decades to the restoring of salmon and steelhead in the southern Salish Sea, and the whole Salish Sea, actually. So he'll be our very special guest in October. I hope folks can join us.
Great. Thank you.
Well, and, sorry, what was it called again? Long Live the Kings?
Long Live the Kings is the name of the organization, yes.
Well, that's a sure but
has a different meaning
it
today.
It does. I was just thinking that. King Salmon, we're talking.
King Salmon. Yes.
Okay.
Well, we're out of time, and thank you, Theron, for joining
Absolutely.
Us.
What a privilege. Thanks for having me here.
So we appreciate it much. So for Amy Truman Craig, who is not here today, Kevin, Theron, I'm Bruce Hallman. Thanks for spending an hour with us, and thanks for listening to KVSH 101.9 FM, The Voice of Vashon, also streaming live at thatvoiceofvashon.org.
And tune in next week. We're going to have the Vashon Opera is going to be here.
Thank you.